We are beginning Masechta Makos. Makos is kind of a sequel to Masechta Sanhedrin. As the Gemara is actually going to point out, an actual thematic connection between the end, or for us in the Gemara Bavli, almost the end of Sanhedrin and the beginning of Makos. But really what it is in Sanhedrin, we learned about the Dalet Mitzvos Beis Din. So now our Masechta is going to talk about a couple of other punishments that Beis Din might impose on a person. So three parakim, and each one of them talks about a different one. Our parak focuses on Edim Zomimin, where the Edim Zomimin, as we're going to see, can get one of various kinds of punishments, depending what they wanted to do to their victim. But sometimes, as we're going to see in the Mishnah over here, it's going to be something different. Then you have the second parak is going to talk about Orei Miklat, and the third one is going to talk about the actual Malkus, which the Masechta is called Makos in token of that. But here in our Mishnah, we're also going to see that there are times where Edom Zomimin get Malkus, even though what they were trying to do to the guy is not Malkus, as we'll see in the Mishnah and in the Gemara. The basic concept of Edom Zomimin, I think we're all familiar with, is, as we're going to see in the next couple of days, the two Edom come to Beis Din and say, Reuven and Shimon come to Beis Din and say that Yankel broke Shabbos, or Yankel stole such and such money, or whatever it is, and they're trying to be Machayev him, whether Misa or Malkus or Mammon, or what have you, or as we're going to see examples in our Mishnah, they're trying to testify something about his status. And then two other Edom, Levi and Yehuda, come and say, listen, you know, maybe the guy stole, maybe the guy broke Shabbos, maybe the guy is a Ben Grush or whatever, that we don't know, but we do know you can't be testifying at it because you, Reuven and Shimon, were with us elsewhere at the time when you said this happened. So now, Gzeres HaKosev, that we believe the second Edom rather than the first, if it was, by the way, we have to realize, as we're going to have the terms, they're going to be used here and there in our parak, Hachosha versus Hazama. Hachosha would be where the second set of Edim contradict something about the actual Edus. So they say, for example, you're telling us that Reuven broke Shabbos on Shabbos Erev Pesach in New York, but Shabbos Erev Pesach, Reuven was with us in California. So then, so they're not saying anything about the original Edim. They're saying that Reuven himself can't have been the one who did it. That's called Hachosha. Then we don't have any reason to believe one set of Edom over the other. In that case, if both sets of Edom check out and Beis Din can't find any way to refute either one of them, then we toss out the whole thing. Nobody gets any penalties or anything. Hazama is, again, the second Edom are saying, I don't know, Reuven may have been in New York on that date, maybe he was Mechal Shabbos, maybe he wasn't, but you were with us in California on that day, and therefore you can't be the ones testifying. So they're not saying anything about the Edom itself, they're saying about the Edim. And in effect, the Torah says really what it is, I mean, it is a Gzeres HaKosev that we believe the second one, but really what it is they're testifying about the second set of Edim, so therefore, in effect, it's as if they're saying about the first Edim that you yourselves, imagine, for example, if they were to come to Beis Din, if Levi and Yehuda, to begin with, were to come to Beis Din and say that Reuven and Shimon broke Shabbos or killed somebody or did whatever, then we would believe them. So the same way over here. Now, in effect, what they're doing is also they're saying Edus about those original Edim, and therefore we believe them. But that's that kind of thing is called Hazama, and then the Torah tells us, Vasisav Loikash Hazama, you have to punish the original Edim with the punishment that they were going to do to the person that they were falsely accusing. There are, by the way, I'm saying that this is kind of a sequel to Masechta Sanhedrin. There are actually manuscripts of Mishnayos that have it as one long Masechta of 14 Prakim, the 11 of Sanhedrin, immediately followed by the 3 of Makos, all as one Masechta. But even when we have them as two different Masechtas, it is, as the Gemara is going to point out, there's a connection between them. The Mishnah begins, Ketzer de Edom Nasin Zomimin. How do Edom become Zomimin? Now, you would expect the answer would be that we're going to explain this whole procedure that we just said. But instead, the Mishnah goes on to something else, which the Gemara is going to ask then in that case, what's the connection? Suppose that two Edom come to Beis Din and say, Me'idin onu b'ish ploini, we are testifying about ploini, shehu ben grusha oy ben chalutza, that he's been assumed to be a kohen, and here he's actually, his mother is a divorced woman, or his mother is a woman who's been given chalitza, meaning that he's a cholol. So they're coming to Beis Din to testify that he's a cholol and he's possible as a kohen. Ein oimim yo'osa zeb ben grusha ben chalutza tachtav. We don't say that this person, or rather these people, the two edim, as we're going to see later in the parak, in order for the dinim of asisim loy kasha zomam to be implied, both of them have to have been muzam. both of them have to be shown to be Adam Zimmerman. So when we say they over here, we mean this person, but really we mean both of them. We don't say that this, that these Adam themselves should be considered a Ben Grusha or Ben Chalutza instead. You could say, for example, let's say the two Adam, Reuben and Shimon, themselves are Kohenim. Maybe we should say Vasi Simlai Kasha Zalmam. They wanted that Yankel was going to be declared a Cholol. Now instead we should declare them Chololim. Nope, that's not what we do. Ella loika aboyin, rather they get malchus, as we're going to work out, as we're going to work out in the Gemara why that is. A couple of interesting things that that Mefoshim, that Rishonim discussed, and Rishonim and Achronim discussed in this connection is an interesting point is, so what would it mean if they're declaring him a Ben Grusha or Ben Chalutza? So among other things, it means that he can't eat truma and he can't receive any matnas kahuna. So why don't we, so we're giving them malchus, as we're saying over here in the Gemara, and as we're saying here in the Mishnah, and we're going to work out in the Gemara why that is. Why don't we also charge them for the fact that here they're trying to deprive him, or they're trying to deprive him of truma. They're trying to deprive him of other matnas kahuna. Aren't those things worth money? Why shouldn't we make them pay money? Why shouldn't we make them pay money for that as well? So a number of Rishonim discuss various angles on that. One point is we don't know how much that could possibly be. You can't. Well, what are you going to do? You're going to make up a value of how much truma he could have gotten them during his lifetime. So therefore, no. So the Rashba explains that no. Then therefore we can't charge them. We can't charge them for that. And the Ramban gives a somewhat different answer. You never know. It's a suffix, after all. You don't know whether he's going to receive truma in the future. He might. It's quite likely, but it's not necessarily that he's going to. Therefore, it would be basically a grumma, and therefore you can't make them have to pay for that grumma. Okay. And then there's different other points that are made within this among various Rishonim and Achronim about various angles on this, why indeed we don't charge them. The Aruch Haner brings up a point. What about, for example, this guy did previously receive money for Pidyon HaBen. Now they're coming to claim that he was a cholol, meaning that it was invalid for him to receive that money. If it turns out they're Adam Zimmerman, should we make them have to pay that? Should we have to make them pay that money or not? So one thing is, I mean, the Aruch Haner points out, you could say, for example, what if he has truma in his possession right now? If he was a cholol, he would have to return it. Now that it turns out they're Adam Zimmerman, should they have to pay for the value of the truma they would have deprived him to? So one thing is that, so the Aruch Haner wants to say that actually maybe there actually would be cases where they would. But if, for example, you could have, let's say, the Adam, when they become Adam Zimmerman, they could say, we didn't know that he had the money of Pidyon HaBen or the Truma in his possession. But if they did know that, if it turns out they did know that, and then maybe, in fact, they would have to pay that amount that they were trying to deprive him of. Fine. Another point that the Rishonim bring up, by the way, is that a chalutza, ben chalutza, is a cholol only d'rabbanan. How can we give them malchus in a Torah on the basis that they're trying to make him posel only d'rabbanan? In a Torah, he'd still be a full-fledged kohen if his mother is a chalutza. And one point is that, given that, after all, they are trying to, the fact is, yes, the psul itself is only d'rabbanan, but nevertheless, the fact is, so actually there are Rishonim who say, the Ritzvah and other Rishonim say that fine, the Mishnah didn't really mean to mention ben chalutza, just whenever we mention ben grusha, it usually goes together with ben chalutza. But not that actually it would work. There are a number of Achronim, the Pnei Yeshua, the Aruch Haner, and so forth, and say, look, the fact is that since he can't do the Avodah and the Bais Mikdash, and therefore we still have to apply Kasher Zalmam, even if the Psul is only Dirabanan.
So maybe it's a matter of place. They were in different places.
They were in a different place, right.
Disqualifying as a family. So, there is
so what it means is, in other words, for them... thank you, and I should have mentioned that. You're right. What it means is when they're claiming that we know he's a Ben Grusha or Ben Chalutza, means they're testifying, for example, that we saw his mother receive a get in this place in this time. And now other Adam come and say, wait, you couldn't have been there to watch that get being given because you were with us elsewhere. You're right. Thank you, Asher. I should have mentioned that. Okay, fine. Continues the Mishnah. Me'idin onu b'ish poinishu chayiv liglois. Here's another case. What about Tosfos, by the way, also goes into various other details about this, among other things. Tosfos brings up the point that usually we have we've learned in Sanhedrin the concept that precisely for this reason, because it has to be possible to be Mazim Ne'edros, is why we need to ask them precisely the date and time when it happened, so that if now it's possible to be Mazim them. So Tosfos points out that actually, though, there is a different point. If we're not actually punishing the Edim with the same punishment that they were going to give this guy, we're not making them no longer Kohanim, then we don't, how can we call it Edus Shati Yochel Azima? So one thing is, because they are getting Malkus in that case, and then Tosfos says that maybe in this case, we really don't care whether it's Edus Shati Yochel Azima, because that applies to other areas, of Halacha. Maybe it doesn't apply in this particular case where they're claiming that he's a Ben Grusha or Ben Chalutza, it's still an Eidos, and therefore we don't care as long as they can pin it down to a certain time and place where the get was given or whatever, then we don't care. The fact that they're not getting the exact same punishment doesn't make it not Eidos Shati Yochel Azima. Tosfos does bring up another point also, which a lot of Rishonim deal with as well, is why is the Gemara specifically mentioning the case of a Ben Grusha or Ben Chalutza where he's a Kohen? Why not mention the case where they come to Beis Din and testify that he's a Mamzer? That could affect the Yisrael as well. So Tosfos says because since the Gemara is going to explain that our Mishnah is continuing from a case of Bas Kohen at the end of Sanhedrin, so therefore it wanted to bring a case with Kohen in. There's a couple of other answers as well, why we don't mention the point that he's a mamzer. And one point is actually the Aruch HaNer brings up a point that because to give edus that he's a mamzer is actually not quite so simple. It would actually be a lot more complicated to be able to claim that he's a mamzer in the case of a kohen being a ben grusha or ben chalutza. All they need to do is testify that his mother was given a get in a certain place at a certain time. But to say that Pnei Yeshua brings up, the Aruch HaNer discusses further that, for example, the Pnei Yeshua says, listen, so what are they going to do if they're going to say if they're going to say his mother was Mizana on a certain time and a certain place with somebody, fine, that doesn't tell us that this child resulted from that. Maybe she was Mizana with somebody else and became pregnant from him. It would be very, very rare to find a case where they could actually testify where the Aruch HaNer brings up a point. Let's say, for example, the mother was in jail and there's nobody else there except somebody where if they have relations then it causes a mamzer. But ordinarily, it's going to be very hard to find such a case. Okay. The Mishnah continues. If they give edus that a certain person is chayev golos, that he killed b'shoigig, and therefore, as we're going to learn in the next parak, that he has to run away to the Ori Mikla. Similarly, we don't say that these edim instead go into golos instead of him. Instead, they get malchus, as we'll learn in the Gemara. Tosfos points out that anyway, even if they say he killed B'shogig, why couldn't he refute them anyway and said, well, I didn't do it B'shogig, I did it B'mezid. And tough luck, you can't get me because you didn't give me Hasra. So what's the Havamina that they should be able to say that he would go to Golos anyway? Tosfos explains, because you could have a case, as we'll learn in the next paragraph, you can have something which was so obviously an accident that it's very clear he didn't do it deliberately. The axe head flew off, for example, or other examples that we'll have where it's very clear that it was an accident. So the Gemara says, now when we're starting off in the Mishnah, Kate said, what do you mean the Mishnah is starting off, Kate said, Edom Nasim Zomimin, how did Edom become Edom Zomimin? And it continues with these cases where they get Malchus, Ha Kate said, Ein Edom Nasim Zomimin Min Boiloi. Shouldn't the Mishnah be phrasing it, how did Edom not become Zomimin? Meaning, in other words, how we have the normal case of Edom Zomimin, Vasisim Lo Kasher Zomam, and here we're saying here are some exceptions to that rule. So why the Mishnah should be starting off with that? V'oid midkatoni l'kamon, and furthermore, we have another question on the Mishnah. Since the Mishnah later on in our perek says the details of how a person becomes an Eid Zayim. Aval omru lahem, that if the second Eidim say to the first one, Heyach atim Eidim, how can you be saying this Eidus? Shari ba'usayim atim ayisim imanu makim plaini, on that day that you're saying that this happened, you were with us in another place. How do Elu Zomimin? Then they become Adam Zomimin. The Klal, the Elu Ein Zomimin, implying then on the face of it that it means only there are they Zomimin, but not the case of our Mishnah. So we have two questions. Number one, why is our Mishnah beginning case of Adam Nasim Zomimin? And then you would think it should be explaining then the cases where we punish them with the punishment or the penalty or whatever it is that they were going to do to the other person. And instead, our Mishnah is giving us a whole different thing where they don't get the same penalty. So, second of all, you have the later Mishnah. Now, Rashi doesn't have the words that we have here in parenthesis in the Gemara, Miklal de'ein elu zomimin. Because according to Rashi, the second question is not so much, the question is not so much that the later Mishnah says that those are Edom zomimin, implying that our Mishnah is not. Rather, the question is, since we're going to have that explanation, that definition, later in the Perek, then why is the Mishnah even beginning over here with the words Ketzin Edom Nasim zomimin? As if it's going to give the answer, when in fact the answer is given only later in the parak. There are a few different ways that we Rishonim have of learning the two questions of the Gemara. For one thing, Tosfos says the two questions are really basically one long question. Even if you're going to say that you could call it that they are Edom Zomimin because the fact is they were refuted by the second set of Edom, but then the question would still be the fact is the Mishnah is saying din hazama ketzav einim nasim din hazama, how are we accomplishing hazama? Then in that case it's only later on in the parak that we discuss how the din of hazama is being accomplished, meaning why is the Mishnah then beginning with the words ketzav einim nasim zemimin. So in other words, yes. So according to that, then the question is, why is the Mishnah saying Ketzed Edom Nasim Zomimin and not Ketzed Eina Edom Nasim Zomimin? Meaning, how is it that we're not keeping that in them in the din of Edom Zomimin? And if you're going to say that, then if you're going to say that the Mishnah is just giving us a general introduction, then the fact is later on we have the details, and therefore there's no reason to b'chlal mention it over here. So the answer is Tana Hosim Kori. The answer is the Tana of our Mishnah is coming from the following standpoint. We just finished Masechta Sanhedrin, and at the end of the tenth Perek of Sanhedrin, we had where there was an expression Kol Hazomim and Makdimin LaOsim Mitzvah. Now, so as we talked about when we learned Sanhedrin in the Mishnayos and in Yerushalmi, the order is that Perek is actually the 11th and last Perek of Sanhedrin, which fits very well with the Gemara over here that was saying we're going straight from there into Makkos. In the Bavli, we had Perek Chelek in between because the last two Perekim were interchanged around. But anyway, the point is that near the end of Sanhedrin, the end of the 10th Perek where we had it, and the end of the 11th Perek in the Mishnayos and the Yerushalmi, the expression is, Kol HaZomim and Makdimin LaOsim Mitzvah. All Edom Zomimin are going to be makdimim to the death that they were going to do for the person that they were accusing. Rashi explains, makdimim means basically they say, listen, you're not going to get out of this. You may as well wake up early and get it over with because you're not getting out of it. Tosfos gives a different explanation that it means that makdimin means we should try to kill them with the appropriate Mrs. Bastin, but if we can't, as we learned in Sanhedrin, then Bastin is entitled to kill them in other ways as well. Anyway, so generally Zomimin get the same Missa as they were going to do to their victim, with the exception of Edom Zomimin against a Bas Koyin and her boil. Namely, as we learned in Sanhedrin, a Bas Koyin sometimes gets Srefa, depending, as we had a three-way Machlokas Tanoim, what exactly is the scenario where she gets Srefa. But we established over there that only she does. The Boil, the man that she was Mizana with, is going to get the regular punishment that would have been for that regular case had she not been a Bas Koyin. Chenek or Skila, or Chenek or Skila, as the case may be, depending whether she's a Naira Marosa or not. So now, in other words, So what we're saying is, so when because the Mishnah had said there is Zomim Vastona Bola, an exception, She'ein Machdimin La'Oisa Misa Elo L'Misa Acheres, that they don't get the same Misa as they were planning for her, but rather a different one. So they come to Beis Din and they say, on such and such a day, Ploinis Bas Koyin was Mizana with Ploini, so now, if it's true, then she's getting Srefa, and the Boil is getting Skila or Chenek, as the case may be. Now, if it turns out that they're Edom Zomimin, they're not getting Srefa, the punishment that they wanted for her, instead they're getting skiller or chenek. So we see, therefore, that we have the Mishnah there is mentioning an exception to the usual rules of Edom Zomen, where instead of getting Vasisim Loi Kasha Zamam, instead they're getting a somewhat different punishment. Tosfos brings up the point, actually, that you now like this. That's obviously if they're coming and saying Eidos on both of them and based in, then we're saying that. What are then? At least we have a partial kasher zamam because we're still giving them the punishment that they wanted for the man that they were testifying against. What if, for example, what if that man was not a man but a boy 9 years old or older? His beer is already considered a beer in halacha, but we can't execute him and base him. He's a cotton. Or what if they're not testifying against him at all because he ran away or something, or they don't recognize him or something? Tosfos brings up the point that the Ri began used to wonder whether in fact we would still apply this din over there, or would we say because as the Gemara is going to point out over here, we learn it from the Gemara actually points out over there that we learn it from the fact that it says Vasisim leKasher Zamam Lasis laOchiv. It says you should do to them what they plotted to do to their brother. Now, why do we need to say that? It doesn't make a difference whether it's a brother or a sister, or a Jewish man or a Jewish woman. Either way, the din of Edom Zomen is still the same thing. What it means is, here where we have a difference between what's being done to him versus to her, then we give them the punishment that they were planning for him.
Mm-hmm.
Now, suppose this brings up then, so does that apply even if there's no him involved? Again, because he's a cotton, for example. So Tosfos says, the read began by wondering that question. And then Tosfos says that eventually the re-answered that yes, actually, we do say regardless whether they're testifying against the boil or not. Either way, we say that we're giving them the punishment that they would have gotten for him had there been a testimony against him. So in other words, in our case over here, this girl was a Naira Marasa, therefore there's Skila involved. Even if they're not testifying against the boil, because, for example, he was a cotton, nevertheless, the punishment we're giving them is Skila and not Srefa because of those words in the Pasuk Lasas La'ochiv. Aye, they're not testifying against the Ochiv, but the point is, not Achosai. We don't give them the punishment that they wanted for her, so it has to be the punishment that would have been for the man that they would have been testifying against.
So the pasuk is only talking about the punishment. It's not talking about the actual edel.
Well, saying that system like kasher zamam lasis la'achiv, we should do to them as they plotted to do to their brother.
Yes.
Right. So the point of that is, in other words, when there's a difference in punishment between a brother and a sister, between a Jewish man and a Jewish woman, then we give them the one that would go for the man. And so that's what Tosfos is saying. That the Ri explained that means actually even if the man is not actually being accused and based in, nevertheless we still do the punishment for the edim zamim that would have been for him. Okay, so the point is, at the end of Sanhedrin, we're learning an exception to the rules of Edom Zomen, namely that instead of giving them, they were testifying against her, and yet they get the punishment that they would have gone to him. So now that we said that, for Yesh Edom Zomen Acherim, Shein Osim Ben Din Hazama Kol Iker, then you have our Mishnah, then starts off from that point of view. Now, there are other cases of Edom Zomen where we don't do the concept of Hazama at all, namely to do Vasisim Lekash Hazamam at all, Ela Malkus Abayim, namely instead we give them Malkus. And that brings us to our Mishnah, Ketzad. What does that mean? Me'idin Ono B'ish Ploini, Shu Ben Grusha Ben Chalutza, that if they come to Beis Din and say Eidos that this Kohen was that this person assumed to be a Kohen till now was a Ben Grusha, Ben Chalutza. Ein Emim, you also said Ben Grusha, Ben Chalutza Tachtav, so we don't declare them a Ben Grusha, Ben Chalutza instead, and a Loike Esar Boim instead they get Malkus. So that explains now why is the Mishnah beginning Ketzad Edom Nasim Zomen, and why is it not going into the actual details of how a person becomes an Eid Zomen? That the details of how he becomes an Eid Zomen will be discussed later in the Perek. But now what we're saying is that it's a continuation. Now that we established at the end of Sanhedrin that there is a case where an Eid Zomen does not get the same exact punishment that they were planning for their victim, now let's talk about cases where at least they're getting what would have done to one member of their victims, the man rather than the woman. Now we're talking about Ketzad Edom Nasim Zomen. How are there cases where an aid becomes a Zomen and yet does not get the exact same consequences is on Mishnah where they get Malkus instead of being declared a Ben Grusha or Ben Chalutza. Okay. Now that we dealt with that point, so now Menahani Mili, where do we know this from that the Edom in these cases should be getting Malkus? Why shouldn't we? Maybe we should declare them a Ben Grusha or Ben Chalutza. Maybe they should go to the Orei Mikla. So where do we know otherwise? Amar Rabbi Shimon Levi, Amar Rabbi Shimon Lakish, the Amar Kra, because the Pasuk says, Va'asisim loy kasha zomam. The Pasuk says you should do to him what he plotted. Him meaning them, the Edom, throughout the Pesukim are written in the singular, but we understand, as the Pasuk itself tells us, that you need at least two Edom, so whenever it says the singular over there, it really means the plural, it means each one of them. Anyway. So the Pasuk says you should do to him as he plotted. Therefore, loy v'loy lazaroi. We can learn from that that it means only you do something to him, but not to his children. Now, if you declare these Edom Zemin, a ben grusha, a ben chalotza, it affects their children as well. The children of a halal are also halalim. So therefore, the Pasuk is implying that you don't do that. Well, the Gemara says, so what's the problem? Fine. Maybe what Beis Din should do, declare this aide, who is himself as a Kohen, declare him that now he's a Cholol, he can't serve in the Beis Hamikdash, he can't receive Tirumah or whatever, but his children will remain kosher. The answer is, well, then it's not, but in Kasher Zomam, Lasis Veleka, well, then it won't be Kasher Zomam, because Kasher Zomam, after all, implied that what were they planning? They came and said that Yankel is a Ben Grusha or Ben Chalutza, meaning that they were going to say that until the end of time, Yankel's children are not playing him. And here, if we say that they themselves are going to be demoted from the Kohuna, and their children are going to remain playing him, then it's not the same thing. And if we do say that all of them are possible, then it's loy, then we're violating loy v'loy lazare. So one way or the other, we can't do it, so therefore we have no choice but to give them malchus.
Consistent.
It's inconsistent, right. Tosfos brings up an interesting point. You can have a case, actually. There is a case where a person's psul does not extend to the next generation. Namely, we know the Torah tells us that a ger from Mitzrayim or from Edom is not allowed to intermarry into the Jewish people until three generations. The grandson of the original ger, or Geyurus, can intermarry, but not before that. So you could have, they're coming and giving eders, that this person, for example, is a Mitzri Sheni, that he's a second generation Mitzri. Well, it doesn't matter. His children would be a Mitzri Shlishi and perfectly kosher, and there's no problem who they can marry into with the Jewish people. So why don't we say then? We should declare them the equivalent of a Mitzri Sheni, and then therefore we're fulfilling both things. We don't have a problem with Lazaroi, and we don't have a problem that we're not doing Kasher Zaman. Tosfos says that's fine, but the fact is a Mitzri Sheni also affects his wife. When the Mitzri Sheni has relations, as the Gemara tells us in Yevamos, that in general, anybody who's possible to intermarry into the Jewish people, if they have a goy, a mamzer, in this case a mitzvah sheni, etc., if he has relations with a woman, she becomes possible to ever marry a kohen, or if she's a daughter of a kohen, and her husband dies and she's childless, she's possible to ever go back eating terumah. Well then, if they're coming and saying that this fellow Yankel is a Mitzri Sheni, then they're also in effect saying that his wife is possible. If we declare them a Mitzri Sheni, then one way or the other, either we're not affecting only him, we're affecting his wife as well, or we're not, and then we don't have Kasher Zalman, so it still would be inconsistent. So we can't do that. So even in the case where they're claiming that he's a Mitzri Sheni, you still can't do Kasher Zalman. So therefore, instead, we give them Malkus in this case, why specifically the punishment in that case is Malkus, we'll see in the Gemara. Orach HaNer brings up a point. I mean, so okay, what if the guy doesn't have any children, or what if the age Zayman doesn't have any children? You could say obviously, well, they could still have children in the future, but still, what if the guy is a Swiss Chama? What if he's not going to have children, etc. And he goes through various possibilities with that also. Rabbi Akiva Eger and Gilyon Ashas brings up another point as well. There is an opinion in Yevamos that a Mitzri Sheni does not possible his wife. Well, according to him, then if the Edom Zimmerman come and claim the guy is a Mitzri Sheni, maybe we should declare them a Mitzri Sheni. Then there's no effect on his wife, no effect on his children. So that's one explanation why it is that in our Mishnah we can't declare them a Ben Grusha or Ben Chalutza, because it would be inconsistent. Either we're going to be violating Loy, or we're going to be violating Kasher Zalman. The Gemara brings another explanation. Bar Pada gives a different answer. Kal v'choymer, he says you can learn that we don't make them a Ben Grusha or Ben Chalutza based on a Kal v'choymer. Madoch, the person himself who causes his children to become chalolim, a koyan who marries a grusha or chalotza, where he causes because of that his children from her are going to be chalolim, enem is chalol, he himself is not desecrated, he himself remains a full-fledged koyan. Now, we won't allow him to do the avodah, and we won't allow him to duchen until he divorces that woman, but nevertheless, we don't say that he's permanently disqualified because of that. He himself remains a full-fledged koyan. So then, Habolachalov lechil. Also, the Kavachomer continues. These Edom Zemen who are coming to declare this person a cholol, but they didn't accomplish it because in the end they were refuted by other Edom. Ain adin shalo yischalo. How much more so that they should not become chololim themselves? Well, the Gemara says machlo for Ravina. Ravina questions that. Im kain, if you're going to tell me that if you're going to try to make that Kavachomer bitalta teras Edom Zemen, then you're going to break down the whole. You're going to be mevatel the whole concept of Edom Zemen, because you could have the same logic everywhere when it comes to Edom Zemen. Uma hasoikol eniniskol madoch, where Edom come and say about somebody that is chayiv skila. And the fact is, as we're going to learn later on in the parak, we don't punish them as Edom Zemen unless the person himself was not put to death yet. As it expresses it later on in the parak, that if they cause the person to be killed, then they are not killed for reasons that we'll discuss later on Dafei or so. So you can make a similar kavachomer, says Ravina. Madach, those who want to cause him, the madach, the Edom who caused somebody to get skila, and in fact he was given skila, and then it turns out that they're Edom Zemen, we don't give them skila, because Gzeres HaKosev. Rashi, by the way, mentions the expression, Kasha Zomam V'loi Kasha Osa, meaning that the Torah says, Kasha Zomam, you should do to them as they plotted, which implies not Kasha Osa. An interesting point is, you know, everybody quotes that always in connection with this din of Edom Zomin, and it sounds like it's a Gemara expression. It seems that not. It seems that Rashi is the first one to actually coin that expression, Kasha Zomam, below Kasha Osa. Mm. Anyway. The point is that if they actually cause the person to get skila, we don't give them skila. Habol is skill, so wouldn't you say the same kind of kavachomer as Barpada is doing? If they're coming to give him skila, v'loy sokol, and they didn't accomplish it because they were refuted as Edom Zemen, ein adin shelo yisokol. How much more so? We wouldn't give them skila. And then in that case, if you work like that, then you have no concept of Edom Zemen. That's how Rashi learns the question. Tosfos has a bunch of questions on Rashi. First of all, why are we using the word lisko? Why, again, we have the expression later on in the parak, hogu ein nehrogin. So just say, ma bole horig, v'loi horag, or v'horag, or something like that, rather than using specifically skila. Second of all, what kind of a question is that? Sure, where you have a Gzeres HaKosev, here we have a Gzeres HaKosev that says, Kasha Zomam, implying V'loi Kasha Osa, then we're not going to apply otherwise because we can't go against the Pasuk. How does that mean that the Kavachomer is not valid where the Pasuk doesn't refute it?
So the Kavachomer is going against the actual Pasuk.
And that's the point. So when the Kavachomer is clearly contradicted by the Pasuk, of course you're not going to use the Kavachomer. But the question is, fine, then don't use the Kavachomer in that case, but use the Kavachomer everywhere else that you could. So you could still use it like Barpada did to teach us about the people who got Malkus in our Mishnah. Tosfos has other questions on Rashi as well. You can't take away the concept of Edom Zemen altogether, but that doesn't mean you can't apply it in one specific case. So Tosfos explains that no, the soikel of Ravina's attempted kavachomer doesn't mean where they were trying to give him skila. It means Reuven goes and throws rocks at Shimon and kills him. What happens? He doesn't get skila. He's a retzeach. And as we learned in Sanhedrin, a retzeach gets a different punishment. Saif. He gets his head chopped off. Well then, maha soikel, madach, he threw stones at somebody else. Ein a niskal. He's not given skila, but rather a different misas based in. Habol niskal, v'loy niskal. Well then, these Edom Zemen who are trying to say that he's chayiv skila, but he didn't actually get skila because they turned out to be Edom Zemen. Ein a din shelo yisokel. How much more so they shouldn't get skila. So now, so that answers all our questions, therefore. So you're not taking away the whole concept of Kasha Zomam. You could say, fine, by other Mrs. Basedin, that concept would still apply. You could say, for example, if they came to Basedin and said that he killed somebody with a sword, then we would say we killed them with a sword, but not if they actually caused him to get executed because Kasha Zomam v'loi Kasha Osa. But you still have the basic concept of Edom Zemen would still apply. You would just break it down in that one particular case, the same way as we're saying with the Ben Rusha ben Chalutza of our Mishnah. And that way, that explains why we're mentioning Skila, that explains why we're not bothered by the fact that, okay, so the Kavachomer contradicts the Pasuk, obviously we don't use the Kavachomer in that case. In any case, the Gemara says that still the fact is we don't say that Kal v'chomer either. Whether we learn like Rashi that it's talking about the Edom Zimin themselves, or whether we're talking about like Tosfos that it means that Reuven is alleged to have killed Shimon with a rock, and yet we don't give Reuven skill, or rather we give him hereg. But and the Edom Zimin though in turn are going to get hereg as well, not skill. So that doesn't work because we don't do that. So it's clear we have to answer like the original answer of Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, that it's based on the pasuk Vasisim Loi Kasher Zamam, and that with the cases of our Mishnah, you're not going to have exactly Loi and Kasher Zamam. The Ramban points out that actually it's not like we can't use this kind of kavachomer in other areas of halacha. We just can't use it over here because, as Ravina is saying, that it would contradict other known dinim about the Edom Zimin. Okay. Next. So far, by the way, we've established how we know that we can't make them a ben gerusha or ben chalutza. We haven't yet established how we know that in that case they get malchus. Maybe it's some other punishment. That the Gemara will deal with after we deal with the question of the how we know in the case that the same din applies to where they're claiming that he's chayiv golos. So the Gemara says when the Mishnah had said me'idin oni b'ish ploini shu chayiv golos chalut, we're testifying about ploini that he is chayiv golos, and we're saying that we don't make them go into Golos, instead they get Malkus. So again, Menahani Mili, where do we know that from? Amar Shlokish, the Amar Kura, because the Pasuk says, Hu Yonus al Achas Ha'orim. He, a Ritzeach B'Shregeg, runs away to one of these cities. So the Hu is a Miut, Hu V'loi Zemimin, only a he, but not Edom Zemimin against him. Rabbi Yechanan says a different way we can learn it. Again, Kavachoymer. He makes a Kavachoymer. Umahu sha'osa maisi b'mezid, madach ha-ritzeach himself, who kills somebody else b'mezid, ene gola, does not go to golos, because the whole concept of golos, as we're going to learn in the next perek, is b'shoigig. And that means, by the way, Rashi says, it doesn't just mean where he did it b'mezid, as in the case where he's getting nisa. We mean even the case where it's amazing, but he's not getting punished at all. For example, let's say they didn't give him Hasra. No Hasra, no Mitzah. Nevertheless, he doesn't run away to the Ori Mikla. And as we're going to learn in the next parak, by the way, in the cases where a person is not protected by the Ori Mikla, then it means he's going to have to watch his back for the rest of his life, because the Goyal Adam can come after him and the Ori Mikla can protect him. So Madach, what he does with Mezid, ain't a gola. Hain, shall they also Maisa with Mezid? They didn't even do a Maisa. They only spoke. But they were giving Edus with Mezid, but they were only speaking, and there was no Maisa involved. The Ritva, by the way, points out, you know, we learned in Sanhedrin about a concept called Akimas Piv, Akimas Svasav, having Maisa, that moving his lips can be considered a Maisa. Well, here they have to move their lips in order to give Edus. And he explains, based on a Gemara that we learned there, well, first of all, he says not really as much of a Maisa as actually killing. It's only a minor Maisa. But then he says, as we learned in Sanhedrin, that it's possible really to say Eidos without a person even moving his lips. They ask him, did this happen on such and such a date, on such and such a time? And he say, eh, or something like that, which means yes, which without actually moving his lips. So Rabbi Yechanan makes this kavachomer. So shaloi also ma'ase b'mezid. They didn't do an action b'mezid. What they did is not really a full fledged action, or maybe not even an action at all. And it was b'mezid. Ain't it din shaloi yiglu? How much more so they shouldn't go into golos. So therefore, Rabbi Yechanan says you don't need a pasuk. You can learn it from that kavachomer. But the Gemara asks back. Why? That itself, that kavachomer, you can use that kavachomer itself could be used to be mechayev them. Bahaloi din hu. Learn the kavachomer the other way around. You should learn like this. Hu sha'osa ma'isim amazin. He did the ma'isim amazin. Therefore, loy legally. Therefore, he should not go into galus. Ki hechid lo tevele kapara. So he shouldn't have a kapara, because to do such a thing, to go kill somebody else from amazin, is so serious that we don't want that. The Torah doesn't want him to have the kapara of the Ori Mikla. Instead, he's going to be in trouble for the rest of his life, and he's going to have to keep away from the Goyal Adam. you could argue, Hain Shaloi also Maisa B'mezid, but they who did not do a Maisa B'mezid, they did something which is not a full Maisa, Nami, indeed, Liglu, they should go into Golos, Kihechid Lahavalu Kapara. That way they can have a Kapara. Maybe you should argue, yeah, the fact is their Avera is not as serious as what they were accusing this guy of, and therefore maybe we should send them into Golos so they can have that Kapara of Golos. So the Gemara says, you're right, the Kavachomer doesn't work for that. Rather, it's clear that we have to answer, like Rish Lakish, that it's based on the miut and the pasuk from the word hu, which means that only the Ritzeach himself runs away to the Orin Miklat and not anybody else. An interesting point in this connection is why the Gemara needs to have why the Gemara needs to give a different way of slogging up each Kavachomer. For Bapada's Kavachomer, we had Ravina saying that then you break down the whole concept of Edim Zomrin. For the second one, we're using a different answer over here that was saying that maybe the lesser thing should be able to have Kapara and the greater thing that not. On the face of it, you could say that you could say the same thing. Maybe give the same answer of kapara by the first one. Say that adrabe. You could say a koyan himself who causes his children to be halalim. We don't want him to have a kapara. But a person who's only claiming that somebody else is a halal, maybe we want him to have the kapara of being declared a ben grusha or ben chalutza himself. And similarly, the Gemara could have used the same answer on the first one as the second one. The Aruch Haner points out again. You're going to say that the whole concept of edim zemin is that a person attempting to be an Eid Zomim, becoming an Eid Zomim is worse than actually causing him to be killed by Beis Din, Hogu, and Narogin. So why don't we use the same refutation for each one? And the answer is that basically to declare them a ben grusha or ben chalutza wouldn't be a kapara. Golos is considered a kapara. Declaring them a ben grusha or ben chalutza is a punishment. That's not a kapara. That's something else. We're saying that when you have there's a difference between a person actually say fine. By Adam Zenman, there is a cost of that when they plan to do it and didn't actually cause it to happen, then we don't punish them for reasons that we'll discuss later on that pay. But here you're talking about doing something, killing without Hasra versus Adam Zenman testifying against the guy. So therefore you're not gonna say that we're not gonna say that we should we so therefore we can't say that that to say to not punish them would break down the whole concept of Edim Zomrin. You would say ordinarily you still have the concept that Gzeiras HaKosev, that when they actually cause the person to be killed, then we still are going, then we're not going to punish them for reasons that we'll discuss later. Okay, in any case, so both of the cases of our Mishnah, in the end we're saying we learn based on a positive that we don't give them, that we don't cause them to do the same, we don't cause them to have the same exact penalty that they were going to apply to him. Instead we say they get Malkus. So now let's deal with how we know they get Malkus. So Gemara says, Omar Ula, remez la'edim zemmin manatorim inayin. Where is there a remez in the Torah for the concept of edim zemmin? Gemara says, what do you mean, remez? Remez la'edim zemmin. V'hoksim v'asisim lo'kash lo'lamim. It says flat out in the passage, do to them as they plotted to do to their fellow Yid. And what are you looking for, a remez? Ella, no. Where is there a hint in the Torah to the concept that we're going to give them Malkus in certain cases of Edom Zomrin? That we're saying that in the two cases of our Mishnah and two other cases that we're going to talk about further down on the Amud, that instead of doing them the exact same thing that they wanted to do to him, instead we give them Malkus. How do we know that? So dichtiv like this. The pasuk says, "V'tzdiku es atzadik v'yoshu es harasha." The Torah describes like this: two people come to Beis Din, says the pasuk, and the Beis Din judges the case. V'tzdiku es atzadik, and they declare the tzadik to be innocent. V'yoshu es harasha, and they declare the rasha to be guilty. And then the pasuk continues, "V'hoyein bin akois harasha." Now, if the rasha is going to be subject to Malkus, then the Torah says they give him Malkus. Now, how does it flow? How does one pasuk flow into the other? Mishumvik, Ziku is a tzaddik, Yeshua is a rasha. Therefore, v'hoya and bin akosa rasha. What do you mean? Two people come to Beis Din. One of them says, "You stole from me." The other one denies it. And then how will we work out the case exactly? And we find out that yes, he is right. It was stolen from him. We don't give the other guy Malkus. So what's a case where two people are coming to Beis Din to argue? Where we're saying the result of it is that you, the rasha, are getting Malkus. So it's certainly not across the board. In other words, the question is, why did the Torah introduce this concept of Malkus with this pasuk about Vitzdikor Satzadik Yeshua Sarosha? Let the Torah say something like this. The Torah should say, two people are arguing, they go to case, they go to court, then if the Rasha needs to get Malkus, why mention the point, how does that add anything to our understanding of the case that tells us therefore he's getting Malkus? So rather what it means is like this. What happens is like this. The Torah is hinting to us. That's why Ullah is calling out a gem. You have Edim that came to Beis Din and declared that a person who really is a tzaddik, they claimed falsely that he's a Rasha. They said that Reuven, who is a tzaddik insofar as he didn't break Shabbos, they're coming and claiming that Reuven did break Shabbos. So they're taking a tzaddik and turning him into a Rasha. As Al Tereba points out in Tanya, you know, the word tzaddik has multiple meanings. We don't mean Reuven as a tzaddik of Tanya. We mean as a tzaddik in the sense that he's innocent in this case. But they declared him a Rasha. But also Edim Achrini, now other Edim come, the Edim who are mazim them, the tzdiku is a tzaddik de meikra, they declare that the person who was a tzaddik originally really is a tzaddik. They come and tell us, you first Edim came and told us that Reuven is a Rasha, that he broke Shabbos, but no, we're telling you he's actually a tzaddik, or we're telling you, to be exact, we don't know whether Reuven is a tzaddik, but whatever, what we do know is that you can't say it because you were with us, elsewhere. The Shavinu Lahani Rishoyim, and with that, they're declaring that the first group of Edim are Rishoyim. In other words, in effect, the tzaddik was a tzaddik, the Yeshua was a Rasha. In other words, we have to imagine that we're walking in the middle of the case. We have a person who until now has been declared to be a Rasha, namely Reuven. Now we have Yankel, actually, to give the name from before, because Reuven and Shimon and Levi and Yehuda were using for the Edim. So we have Yankel, until now, was considered to be a Rasha because Edim came and said that he was a Rasha, Yankel broke Shabbos. Now Levi and Yehuda, the second set of Edim, come and say, no, Yankel is a tzaddik. The tzaddik was a tzaddik, this person really is a tzaddik, and we can testify to that, because he didn't break Shabbos on the day that you said he did. Now, as far as who are the Rishoyim, you, Reuven and Shimon, the Yeshua Sarosha, you guys are Rishoyim, because you testified falsely against him. So now the other Edom come, the tzaddik was a tzaddik, and they declare the one who was supposed to be the tzaddik, the meikra, the one who was a tzaddik all along, that he really is a tzaddik. He didn't do this aveda, v'shavinu, lahani rishoyim, and therefore that, in effect, therefore they're saying, the first ones are rishoyim, you testified falsely. So now the pasuk says v'hoyim v'nakos rasha. Now if the rasha is going to get malchus, so therefore this is where we learn that Edim Zomim get malchus. Agoy Sabach discusses over here in that case. Why don't we say that across the board Edim Zomim always get malchus? And the answer is because since the pasuk says v'asisim lo kasha zomam, we have to give them whatever punishment they were going to do to the guy. And as the Gemara is going to point out later on the Amud, you can't give him two punishments for the same thing. Mishum risha achas at machayvay, but not shtei rishoyis. You can't give him two penalties for the same thing. So they can't give him malchus plus whatever they were going to cause the other guy harm. But here in a case where of a ben grusha or ben chalutza, where we can't do the din of hazama, because as we established before, then that means either it's going to have an effect on their children or it's going to not have an effect on their children, and then it's not going to be kasha hazamam, then basically so malchus becomes the default option. So in effect, what we're saying is, based on this pasuk, malchus is the default for Edim Zomim, where there's no other penalty that we can do instead.
In general, you give them the worst, the hardest.
In general, you give them whatever it is that they were trying to do to the guy. All right. So why we're calling it a remez, by the way, actually, the Pnei Yeshua brings up, I mean, on the face of it, yeah, how else are you going to understand the pasuk? So you should call it a full-fledged limud from the pasuk. And the Pnei Yeshua discusses that you're right. It is really a full-fledged limud. He says the reason why we're calling it a remez is because the pasuk doesn't actually mention the words Edim Zomim. So therefore we can call it a remez. Then he goes into a longer explanation in that case, Taka, then what, since it doesn't mention Edim Zomim, why don't we understand that it mean that it tells us a different din? And then he goes into an arichos and discusses that since we learn from the pasuk over there about what kinds of lavim get a person malchus, then therefore So therefore we can't say we're only learning from it, a concept that we're going to learn later on, that we only give him malchus, that we only give him one punishment and not two, and instead it means there has to be a remez to the Edim Zomim as well, even though it doesn't say. Okay. So the Gemara says, the tipu klemi lo sana. Why do we need to say that? They get malchus because of this limud, because of this remez from this pasuk. Why not say straight out? They were oiran lo sana. Lo sana b'racha eid shaker. That you can't testify falsely against a fellow yid, and they testified falsely, and the general rule is most lavim get malchus. And the answer is mishum dahavi lav shein ben meisah, because the lav shein ben meisah, there's no action involved, and because as we said before, either edus is in general considered not a meisah, because we would say, if we say that akimas fasav loy havi meisah, if we say that moving his lips is not considered a meisah, or even if we consider that it is, you, as we said, it's possible to give edus without actually moving his lips. They ask him, is this true? And he says, or yeah, or something like that, where he's not actually moving his lips. And when there's a lav shein b'maisa, you don't get malchus for, as we're going to learn later on in the Masechta in detail. So therefore, we can't give them malchus on the grounds of loisana. And the only reason that we can give them, the only basis that we can use for the malchus is this remez from the pasuk. Okay. So the Gemara says, turn it up on it. Dalad dvarim nemu be'edim zemin. There were four cases that were said about edim zemin where they're not getting the exact thing that they were planning to do to the guy, but rather something else. Two of them so far. We learned two of them in our Mishnah, and now the Mishnah is going to, now the Braisa is going to bring another two. In Nasin ben Grusha ben Chalotza. Number one, we don't declare them ben Grusha ben Chalotza, as we explain. The in Goylan la'ore Miklot, we don't send them off to the Ore Miklot, also as we explain. The in Meshamaras a Koifer. The third one is, we don't make them pay Koifer. If they testify that Ploni's Shur is a Shur Muad and that it killed somebody, we're there. The Torah tells us that the owner has to pay Koifer, has to pay a certain monetary fine. Then we don't make them pay that. Instead, they get Malkus. The Indim Koran, the Eved Ivri, and the fourth one is, we don't sell them as an Eved Ivri. If they give Eidos on a person that he stole and couldn't afford to pay, and that therefore he should be sold as an Eved Ivri, so Rashi explains actually what they would be testifying now. How could they be testifying just that he stole? That wouldn't automatically mean that they're saying he's an Eved Ivri. They could always claim later on that we didn't know he was poor or something. So Rashi explains it means that they're coming to Basin and testifying, not only did this guy steal, we were there in Basin in this date and this time and this place, where they declared, you, Pliny, you, Yankel, do not have money to pay for your Gneva, therefore we're selling you as an Eved Ivri, and now they come to another Basin and testify that that's what happened.
They're testifying that on Thursday,
your Beis Nissen, Tufshin Pei Hei, in New York, a Beis Din declared Yankel to have to be sold as an Eved Ivri because previously he had stolen and he's poor and couldn't afford to say it. So now, later that day, they come to a Beis Din in California and they give that edus that was determined in the Beis Din in New York.
So testifying that he's subject.
That he's subject to being sold as an Eved Ivri. So now, when it turns out that they're Edom Zemmin, because we tell them, you weren't in New York to observe that, you yourselves were in California on that day, then instead we give them Malkus.
Just wondering.
Yeah.
Because you started saying to Rabban, and before you were saying Kasha Zaman, Edom is a little Zaman, that there's like a
few. Yeah, we did all the lines in between. Yeah. Okay, so Mishum Rabbi Akiva Omru Afin Meshaman Api Atzman. They said in the name of Rabbi Akiva, there's a fifth case where we give them Malkus. They also don't pay on their own statement. Meaning, in other words, that if they themselves were Huzam in one Basin, so now what happens is, let's say that he owes $100. Now Vasis and Lakashazam, it means that they owe $100. Now so the guy is going to have to bring them to Basin to collect that debt from them. Now let's say before he had a chance to, they ran away and they came to another Beis Din and admitted that they were Edom Zemmin. So now we're not going to make them pay on their basis of their own statement, as the Gemara will explain at the bottom of the Amud, which we'll learn about tomorrow. Even though the Chiyuv was already established in the first Beis Din, they're claiming that it was established in the first Beis Din, but nevertheless, Rabbi Akiva is going to say that they don't pay because basically, as the Gemara is going to explain at the bottom of the Amud, because it's a knas. I mean, a person doesn't pay a knas based on his own admittance. So let's work through these other cases. So, ein nasin ben grusho ben chalotza kedam moron. We explain why we don't make them a ben grusho ben chalotza. The ein goyim la'orim miklat kedam moron. Why we don't send them to the orim miklat, we already explained. In each case, because we have a positive. As far as the Ein Meshalman as a Kofer, why are we saying that Edim Zemin do not pay Kofer? The reason is Kasavri Kufra Kapara, because the Tana of this Braisa holds that the Kofer is a Kapara. I mean, there's two different ways of looking what the purpose of the Kofer is. We're saying the Torah tells us a person's Shurimur killed somebody, then he has to pay a Kofer. What's the idea behind that Kofer? Is it basically a payment of mammon? He caused somebody to die. He damaged that other person's body and killed him. Therefore, like any other case of damages, you have to pay the yoshim. Or is it that it's basically a kapara for himself, that his ox killed somebody and it was a mord and he should have known to watch that ox and he didn't, and therefore the Torah is saying basically he ought to be chayav misa, have the gamba all of yomos, but instead we're going to make him pay a kofer. Or the Tana of our Braisa holds that the basic idea behind the Kofer is Kapara. Well, the Hani Lav Mene Kapara Ninu. Well, these people are not high of that kind of Kapara because their ox didn't kill somebody. They said that it did, but that's not a reason they're not subject to that type of Kapara. Therefore, so now it is true they would have to pay him. They would have to pay the person the value of his ox, because they were going to say the ox itself was to be put to death, and it turns out that that's not true. So that they do have to pay. But as far as the kofer, which is paid to the yoshim of the victim, that they're not that kind of kapara is not relevant to them because the fact is they're sure didn't kill somebody. And the Ritva brings up a point. So what? It's still a chiyuv of money where we should still say kasher vashis amloy kasher zomam, and he explains that basically the Gemara and Bava Kamma discusses the question, according to the opinion that it's a kapara, what if the owner of the shor doesn't want to pay it? He says, I don't need the kapara, I don't care. Are we going to make him pay it or not? So, and the Gemara discusses that point over there, and the Gemara actually leaves it as a suffix. The result is that we can't force him to pay it. So now, therefore, so the Edim Zongmen, so it comes out, if they say he's chayav kofer, they're not necessarily forcing him to pay money, because he may not end up paying that money. So that's why we can't charge them the kofer. And then he goes on to say that the whole point is they're saying that the owner of the shor should have been chayav misa b'dei shamayim, and the fact is that his shamayim itself knows to begin with whether he's chayav or not. So you don't really need their edus, so you don't really have kasi from lo kasha zamam. So here where the kofer is supposed to be instead of that, yes, the kofer is being imposed by a beis din down here, but it's in place of misa b'dei shamayim, and misa b'dei shamayim the guy was never subject to in the first place because it was false edus, and Hashem knew to begin with that it was false edus. So therefore we can't really say that there's a kofer involved over here. The Ritva actually likes this explanation very much and says, "V'nochen huma oid." He says there's a very correct, very good explanation. So that's why we're saying they don't pay the kofer. The Gemara says, "Man tana kufra kapara." Which tana is it, in fact, that holds that the kofer is meant as a kapara? Meaning, in other words, again, it's not a matter of mummering that just, you know, he injured the other person, therefore he has to pay, but it's rather a matter of kapara to make up for a misavid eshamayim that he should have had. This would be the opinion of Rabbi Shmuel ben Oshur Rabbi Yechon ben Breika. The Tanya, as we learn in a Braisa, the Nosan Pidyon Nafshei, when the Pasuk says you should pay a ransom for his soul. Now, what does that mean? Pidyon means a ransom, or it means an equivalent. So whose soul? Dmei Nizek. The Tanakama of the Braisa says means the value of the Nizek. We figure out how much would the Nizek have been worth had he been sold as a slave, let's say. And that person, the victim who was killed by the Shur, is how much the owner of the Shur pays. Rabbi Shmuel, and Rabbi Shmuel says that it means the value of the mazik. So you figure out how much he would be worth if he was sold as a slave. So my lab b'hokamitzugi. Shouldn't we assume that's the machlokas? Is demar sava kufra mamona? The Tanakama holds it's a payment of money, like any other case of nezek. So here, the victim was worth X amount, therefore you have to pay X amount. Rabbi Shmuel, whereas Rabbi Shmuel holds kofra kapara. That's a kapara. Therefore, we don't care how much the nizik was worth, we care how much the mazik is worth. He himself should have gotten misa b'dei shamayim, and instead he has to ransom himself by paying to the yoshin. How much he himself would have been worth. So you would see therefore that Rabbi Shmuel holds it's a matter of kapara. Amar Papa, but Papa says not necessarily. Loid, Kula Amar Kufra Kapara. They might both agree that the Kufra is a Kapara. Vahokha, Vahokha Mifligi, rather the Machalukas is, Marasavar Bidin Nizak Sheminin, or Marasavar Bidin Mazak Sheminin. In general, when it has, or not in general, when you do, how do you establish the value of that Kapara? The Machalukas is just so you're valuing it based on the value of the Nizak, or based on the value of the Mazak. So in other words, by paying that amount, by paying the value of the nizik or the mazik, as the case may be, then he's accomplished his kapara and he's not chayav nisa b'nei shemayim. But not that there would be anybody who holds necessarily that it's only mamrin. So in that case, my time marriage abanon. Why do the chachamim hold that you should go according to the value of the nizik? Rabbi Shmuel, we understand if he's saying it's meant as a kapara to ransom himself, he should have been chayav nisa b'nei shemayim. Instead, we're making him pay money. Then it's logical he should pay his own value. He himself was, so to speak, mortgaged to a nisa b'nei shemayim, so therefore he has to redeem himself for his own value. That's easy to understand. But why do the chachamim say you go according to the value of the nizik? What and why is that a kapara for the mazik? And imagine, for example, you could have, you know, the nizik could have been this old 90-year-old guy who's on his last legs, and you know, he's worth $5 as a slave. Meanwhile, the mazik is this young, healthy guy who's worth hundreds of thousands. You're going to get him, let him get away from the chachamim with a kapara of $5. What's the logic? So the answer is they say it's based on a gzeira shava. Nema hashos alamata v'nema hashos alamayla. You have in the psukim over there where it uses the word yushas. You have where it says over here, you have over here in Kofa Yushas Olav, and a few psukim earlier, you have a case of a person who hits a pregnant woman and causes her to miscarry, where it says Kasha Yoshis Olav Bala Isha. Same shodish, it means a place. It means to impose. It means to impose a certain amount that has to be paid. So Malahalam bin Nizik, Afkan bin Nizik. Now, in the case of the pregnant woman, you're obviously going according to her value. How much was she worth pregnant, and how much is she worth now not pregnant? Meaning, hypothetically, a person was buying her as a slave woman, and now is going to have her children as well. How much would it be worth with the children versus without? Afkan bin Nizik. The same way, based on this, we have to say that here also, it means you go according to the Nizik. It doesn't seem logical, but that's how it is. The Haggadah Sabach points out it's not really a true gzeira shava. It's not a hekesh either, because there are a few psukim apart. It's what's called gili milsa ba'alma, it defines that whenever we use the word yoshis, means we're going according to the main nizik. So over there it's logical to say, but nevertheless over here, even though it seems less logical, that's how the chacham say that's how it is. Rabbi Shmuel answers back. I hear you, but v'nosin pidyon nafshik ziv. The fact is, the pasuk says he has to pay the ransom of his soul, which implies his own soul, so it has to be his value. V'rabbanan, the rabbanan answer back. Ain't pidyon nafshik ziv. Yes, of course it says pidyon nafshik. Miu kishaminin b'dinizak shaminin. Yes, he has to ransom himself. But how do we evaluate that amount? Is based on the value of the nizak. Gzeres hakosav based on this gili milsa from the word yoshis and from the word yoshis. So fine. The point is, in other words, that at least so first the Rav Chista had said that it's only Rabbi Shmuel, but Rabbi Yechon ben Breuker, who would hold that the koifer is a kapara, and therefore we don't impose it on the Edom Zevman. Now the Gemara is saying it doesn't have to be only according to him. The Chachamim might agree with that basic concept as well. They just have a different opinion how you evaluate what the amount of the koifer is. Fine. Either way, whether it's according to the victim or according to the owner of the sharia. In any case, we're saying that. It doesn't apply to the Edom Zimmerman. So the Gemara, by the way, mentions in this connection, speaking of this matter of the fine. So that takes care of that. So that explains how we know that the Edom Zimmerman are not paying koifer. Now comes the fourth one. We said the Edom Koren be Eved Ivri. We said that the Edom Zimmerman are not sold as an Eved Ivri if they testified that the other guy was to be sold as one. So Rav Hamnuna Lameimer, Rav Hamnuna thought to say that what the Braisa means is Hanimili Hecha de Isra Lididei. That would apply where the Edom Zimmerman have the, or no, where the victim, where the one that they were testifying against, had money. So in other words, before we were saying that we're talking about where they testified that a Beis Din in this place said they used to be hired, that he used to be sold as an Eved Ivri. Now the Gemara doesn't know that conclusion yet. Rav Hamnuna is assuming that where they come and say in Beis Din, Pliny stole, And the fact is, Pliny has money, so therefore they weren't planning to get him sold as an evidivri in the first place. Therefore, we shouldn't sell them as an evidivri. Since he wasn't going to be sold, then therefore they shouldn't be either. In other words, let's say, for example, you know, so again, they're coming and saying that Yankel stole money. Now, if Yankel would have had the means to pay, now when it turns out they're Adam Zemin, then we should have to see. If Yankel would have had what to pay, then we should say, you Adam Zemin yourselves are poor, and had you yourselves stolen, you would have been chayv to be sold as an evidivri. But fine, since Yankel, who you were accusing falsely, wouldn't have been sold as an evidivri, we're not going to sell you as one either, you'll have to owe that money when you're able to. Rav Hamnuna thinks that's the case we're talking about. Since he wasn't going to be sold, then they shouldn't have to be sold either. But let's say to begin with, Yankel himself is poor, and their agos that he stole would have caused him to be sold as an evidivri. So Rav Hamnuna thinks the same. It means even if they have money, they should be sold as an evidivri. Maybe the bride says not addressing that case. But Rava says to Rav Hamnuna, the Maharam takes out those words, but anyway, it's the stomach of the Gemara answering back. No, v'lei mulei, why? They should be able to tell him, I ant have a loch, look, if you had money, me have a mizdabnis, would you have been sold? Anan nami le mizdabdinen. We shouldn't have to be sold just because you don't have money. Our edus was that you stole, not necessarily that you were going to be sold as an evidivri. The Maharam explains basically that the Gemara it's not Rava asking on Rav Hamnuna, it's the sum of the Gemara explaining that Rav Hamnuna can't have asked the question that way because he himself would realize that that's not a Svara to ask. Rather, we should say that with the way it really was, Rav Hamnuna thought to say, where either he or the victim or they, the Edom Zemin, have money, then that's when the Braise is saying we don't sell them as an evidivri. But let's say Yankel didn't have money and they don't have money either, maybe we should sell them. Amalei Rava, here's where Rava tells him, no, v'nimka b'gnei vassoi, amar achmana, the pasuk says that they should sell him for his theft, b'gnei vassoi, v'lei b'zmamai, implying, now why does it have to say b'gnei vassoi? The pasuk makes it clear, we're talking about a thief. So therefore it means that only because of his theft do we sell him, but not because of his being an aid zonim. So there's a cost of that we never sell him, even where, yeah, their aidus would have caused him to be sold as an evet ivri because he's poor. They themselves ought to be sold as an evet ivri because they're poor and they don't have the money to pay. Nevertheless, there is a cost from the word Vignevosai tells us that no, we don't sell them as an evidivri, so that's another one of those cases where so they're going to have to pay money because they're claiming that he would have had to pay money, but in addition they're getting malchus because that's one of the four cases we're saying where they get malchus instead of doing vasisim lekasha zaman.
They
have to pay eventually, but the point is they're getting malchus for the fact, as we said before, we had the remez and the posik that Ula brought from the words v'hoyeh and v'nakoyis ha-rosha, the tzidikos ha-tzadik v'yeshuvas ha-rosha, v'hoyeh and v'nakoyis ha-rosha. Basically, as we said, the default punishment for an eid zomim is malchus. Most of the time, that gets overridden by whatever other thing was going to be v'asisim l'kasher zomam. But where we can't do the v'asisim l'kasher zomam for one reason or another, in each case based on a logic from a possible, then in each case we give them malchus instead, and those are the four cases. So then grusha, then halutza, golos to the ore miklat, where they're saying that he should have to pay kofer, and where they're saying that he was going to be sold as an evidivri. In those four cases they get malchus, and in every other case we just do rasisim lekasher zomam. And then we learned in the Braisa also, we had the opinion of Rabbi Akiva, who said there's a fifth case, which we'll deal with that tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem.